Howdy everyone, you're listening to the Voices of Importing podcast. I'm your podcast host, client manager Matthew Malicious of InTouch Manufacturing Services. InTouch is an American-owned firm headquartered in Shenzhen, China, that specializes in everything from quality control product inspections, to factory audits, to arranging lab testing and more.
Today's topic of discussion is the ups and downs of sourcing from China. I'm joined today by David Alexander of Baysource Global. David, how are you doing?
I'm fine. Thanks, Matthew. Thank you for having me today.
Absolute pleasure to have you. Just so the listeners have a better idea about your background and your company, would you mind explaining to them a little bit about yourself and Baysource?
Sure. Baysource started in 2005, and we established an enterprise on the ground in China to assist small and medium-sized businesses with sourcing projects in China. So we've grown from a few people to over 40 people now, and we don't sell anything. What we are is a project management firm, and we're basically a variable cost alternative to doing business in China. So companies in the United States don't have to invest in assets, resources, personnel to take on the advantages of. So we're in place to serve as that project management arm and provide our companies an on-the-ground presence in China. And so our expertise is in engineering, sourcing, quality control, and China supply chain initiatives.
It seems like Baysource really runs the gauntlet in terms of handling projects in China. With that, I imagine you've seen just about every sort of project that there is out here in China. Is that somewhat accurate?
We've seen a wide variety of projects and of change. And, you know, that background is we help companies lean into, tap into by being able to alert them to the nuances and challenges of doing business in China. We become their eyes and ears and their feet on the street in China. You know, for instance, this year alone, you've seen a lot of factories closing due to regulatory violations. And we help our clients get out ahead of that curve and say, hey, you might need to be looking at some alternative suppliers for that product you're currently getting. So if you want, we can begin compiling a list of new resources and new options for manufacturing.
That's such an amazing asset, actually, because it's one thing to read about events in the news and see them on TV, but unless you have that real presence on the ground, then you're not really getting the most up-to-date information. That being said, that's kind of a risk in itself of sourcing from China, is just being disconnected from the country, not being here yourself. But what would you say, aside from that, just not knowing what's really happening here, are there any other major risks of sourcing from China and doing business with the country?
Yeah, well, 50,000 foot view, our risk is lost time. And what I mean by that is everybody that's doing some sort of project in China is trying to produce, you know, a service or a product. And that's a product that we assume they want to monetize. So it becomes part of their overall top line strategy. And every month they delay or that they're delayed is the equivalent of 2 to 6 months of delayed revenue opportunity. So from very high up, I would say the greatest risk of doing something with China is the delay and lost sales and revenue opportunity. But there are also risks that involve cost overruns. So we make assumptions that to start a new product or project, it's going to cost X. And we've seen time and again that the client hasn't factored in not only time, but product development costs and startup costs. If you're going it alone, you know, it's very hard to mitigate those cost overruns. And so having an ally or a presence in China helps you get out ahead of that risk, not to mention the obvious risks, which we all know would be the top two risks are quality control and, of course, intellectual property theft. So having an on-the-ground presence in China vis-a-vis somebody you trust and work with on a daily basis is a huge advantage.
And that kind of leads me to a follow-up question. I mean, how do most importers err when they source from China? I mean, it seems like one area where they definitely can go wrong is just not having boots on the ground that they can rely on, that they can trust to really give them a play-by-play. But are there any other ways that importers go wrong when they're working with China?
The most common mistake we see anybody when importing a product from China is they don't prepare a budget, first of all, so we talked about costs, but also an RFP, a thoroughly prepared deck of information, product information, drawings, material requirements, specifications, certification requirements. They don't prepare a professional RFQ or RFP to distribute to potential manufacturers in China, which indicates, based on its professionalism and the preparations they put into it, their seriousness and their own professionalism about having a product made. So they don't convey or project a professional image when they piecemeal together a product requirement, and that's just fed into the factory bit by bit. You want to get ahead of that and demonstrate to the factory that you're all lined up. You've got your facts in order. You've got a new product. It serves a purpose. It's unique. It's innovative. And you've invested in professional product drawings, three-dimensional drawings. You understand the materials that are required to go into that. Because if you're not specifying these things, particularly materials, you're leaving it up to some factory, whether it's in Chicago or China, to make those decisions on their behalf. So I think that's the biggest error we see people make, is not having all of the information, as much of the information on the front end of a project as necessary.
I couldn't agree more, especially with that part about specifying things. I mean, for example, I've mentioned this on some of my other episodes. Let's say you want red shoes. Well, in your mind, that's very clear what the red shoes should look like. However, to the factory, what kind of red? Is it Pantone color 222 red, or is it Pantone color 333 red? There's so many choices that you need to make so that the factory can make an informed decision about their manufacturing. And as you mentioned, if you don't specify those things, then they'll guess, and then you'll get some sort of product that you're frustrated with. And then you might go to the factory and say, what is this? And they'll say, well, you didn't tell us, so we did that. And then that just creates a bunch of friction that no one really has the time or the patience to deal with. And it's just a situation that can be avoided.
To use your example, it's a great example. About 8 or 10 years ago, there was a newsworthy bit of information that came out about a toy company that basically said, paint cars blue. And so what you're referring to, of course, is aesthetically, does the product get produced as the brand wants it to get produced? So there are certainly the subjective and aesthetic reasons that a product doesn't pass quality control. What about certifications and safety requirements, particularly with toys, products that are, you know, coming out under U.S. laws, having to do with part per million of lead content? So paint the car blue. Well, the Chinese factory's going to paint the car blue. However, that paint could have a certain amount of lead content in it, which this, in this case, did. And if a child puts that product in his mouth, then, of course, that's when you get in some safety issues. So you bring up a good point with color and aesthetics, but we also have to keep in mind that if you're not able to audit the factory and understand the brand and the composition of the paint, that you can run into problems when you get your product over. You might not even be able to sell your product on the market in the U.S.
Certainly. I mean, not being able to sell your product is one thing because it doesn't match your spec, but then it can go even further. As you were mentioning, that car, it had lead. That is just a tidal wave of repercussions. You could get sued by the children's family. You could get sued by the government. You could get sued by a lot of people. I don't think anyone wants to get sued, nor does anyone want to see those people get hurt. And it all comes down to just specifying, to just thinking through your product and trying to poke holes in it and trying to find out those areas that haven't been specified, just so you can be as crystal clear with your factory when you're talking to them. I think that's also some great insight. So far, we've kind of touched on some places where people can err when they source from China, some of the problems they can encounter, but what about some major advantages when sourcing from China? I mean, a lot of people, they think of China and they think cost savings. That's the first thing. And for a lot of people, there are cost savings. But aside from that, are there any other major advantages to sourcing from China?
Yeah, certainly. So, you know, in 2005, the reason we were engaging clients in China was pure cost savings. So wholesale moves of blanket orders to China for the pure cost savings opportunity. But the greatest advantage we see of working with China today is the infrastructure and the assets that are in place. There's almost every kind of manufacturing discipline in place in China. Some of that is due to private investors and capitalists in China, but of course, there were a lot of state-owned and still are a lot of state-owned enterprises in China who have put assets, equipment, brick and mortar, things in place that are ready to go today. So when you're trying to make a new product, if you're a company, even if you're a Fortune 500 company and you're embarking on a new product launch, you don't necessarily want to invest in capital to launch that product until that product's proven. And the same goes with smaller companies who have a new product and they simply don't have the net worth or the wherewithal to open a small shop or a floor somewhere in the U.S. because assets are already in place in China, ready to go. And as a matter of fact, as you know, Matthew, China's moving towards automation and robotics now. So manufacturing is improving, actually, in China, like it's never seen before.
Couldn't agree more. I mean, when it comes to automation and moving towards Industry 4.0, there's something on the horizon. It's very big. It's called Made in China 2025. And the aim of the government-sponsored initiative is to bring Chinese manufacturing up to par with the likes of American manufacturing, Japanese manufacturing, German manufacturing, all by the year 2025. Now, the results by 2025, I don't know what they'll be like, but there's major government capital behind it. And I think when you have a lot of money and a lot of direction, that sort of plan that's just concrete and it's just uniformly agreed upon in China, I think there will be some pretty major results. It really actually saddens me sometimes when I hear people say, China's only making crap. They only make cheap products. That's not true for a few reasons. I mean, sure, some importers, that's all they want. They just want a cheap product. But this initiative, Made in China 2025, that's really going to show the world, I think, that no, China isn't just making cheap stuff anymore. They're not making just some 2-cent disposable toothbrush, although they can still probably do that if an importer wants that. But they already make a plethora of iPhones. There's Xiaomi, there's Huawei. Those are some major brands that are making innovative products. And I think that will only continue with Made in China 2025. And you mentioned just a little while ago some of the assets of China, like the infrastructure in place that the government has helped cement. And I think in addition to that, there's the human capital. I'm not just talking about cheap labor, though. I'm talking about skilled labor. China graduates thousands of STEM graduates a year. And I remember, on a separate note, Tim Cook talking about why so much of Apple's supply chain is in China. He said that, I'm paraphrasing, he said that China stopped being a cheap import destination years ago. Although you can still get cheap products, it also has the capabilities for sophisticated products. And that's because there's such a concentration of everything you need in one part. The example he gave was product designers and industrial engineers. He was saying that in the United States, at least where he's at, maybe not the case for all over the United States, you'd struggle to fill a room with product designers and industrial engineers and people with real hands-on experience that have been in the manufacturing facility. But he said when he's in China, he can talk to his engineers and he could find enough of those people to fill football fields. So I think there's a lot of potential here. I think when it comes to product development, you know, the infrastructure in place that you mentioned, the human capital that I mentioned, and also the Made in China 2025 initiative, all those things together are some very formidable advantages, some real great building blocks for your product, whatever you want made.
Yeah, and people don't always realize or understand the competitiveness of being accepted into a university in China. With 1.3 billion people there, getting into a college, a university, is one of the most difficult things to do. So just by default, you're sifting through the greatest minds, the most prepared students who then get, you know, four-year degrees in China. And that's one of the most difficult things to accomplish, you know, in a family's life, is to get their son or daughter into and out of a university. So you're right. The people we're working with in our organization are all degreed and vetted. And that's something that a U.S. company doesn't have the resources or the time to go assemble a team. We have a lady that's in charge of nothing but human resources, going through thousands of resumes every day, you know, for any type of open position.
Yeah, I think when it comes to human capital and those STEM qualifications, China has a lot to offer. I want to change gears a little bit, though, changing from just the pure advantages of sourcing from China in general to differences in Chinese factories versus in other countries. I mean, broadly speaking, what differences do you see in Chinese factories versus those of other nations?
Well, I can only speak to China because I don't have any experience in other nations, but I would say, let's just contrast the U.S. and China. When you're making something in China for a Western market or a U.S. market, a lot of the times the Chinese are making products that they don't have a fundamental understanding of what they're even being used for. So as they're producing products and then potentially testing products without very clear and written and documented fit and function or performance specifications and requirements, the Chinese don't know what they're making and what they're making it for. Whereas if you were making something again in Chicago, that worker might go, oh, well, I know that the shopping cart wheels are supposed to go straight. They're not supposed to, you know, teeter, or, you know, I know what a sham wow is. You know, it's a chamois being sold in infomercials. A Chinese person might think it's a blanket or something like that.
Yeah, who knows?
To contrast China with the U.S., I'd say that is certainly a key difference, is that products being produced overseas are being produced for our market. And so that's, again, where what we talked about earlier in the podcast were clear, written requirements. That's when those are most significant, and testing have to be set up. They're not going to guess, or they might guess, as to how to test your product. But if you don't have pass-fail criteria so that a team like yours, Matthew, can come in and, you know, do, you know, AQL testing, then you could get, you know, a $50,000 order, half of which is not working properly.
Totally. I think there's a lot of sense in making sure that your workers actually know what they're making. I think an example from my time with InTouch is that a long time ago, this factory, they were making butter trays to hold butter. Now, in the United States, butter is pretty common. You can find it very easily. In China, however, not so widely consumed. And so the problem was that these factory workers, they didn't even know it was a butter tray. They didn't know what a butter tray was for. They just saw a product SKU. That's how they knew it. And they didn't realize that the butter tray could not fit a standard stick of butter. I think it was 3/4 as big as it should have been. So it was 75% of a butter tray. And if someone had just gone in and done some, maybe a during production inspection at 50% of the order's completion, or even better, at 30%, they would have seen, well, wait, these butter trays aren't to spec. These people don't understand that the product is supposed to hold butter.
You hit on a great point. And so if you don't have a presence at the factory monitoring production, not just pre-shipment inspection, but going in, you know, after a tool has been made, that's ideally when you catch a problem or an issue like you just described. If you don't have a presence there, if you don't have people literally getting up in the morning, getting on a train, going to a factory with their notes and their drawings, and then saying, okay, take me to the factory floor or take me to the tool you've just built, then you are also exposing yourself to huge financial risk right there, even if it's just a butter trick, you know, kind of a what we call cheap and cheerful item. You can get ahead of that financial risk on the front end. So we have literally saved our customers hundreds of thousands of dollars by rejecting something before it begins. Of course, the worst scenario is the factory's already produced 10,000 butter trays, and then you have to reject the entire order. And that's the advantage to having an ally or a partner on the ground in China. We go in, we're not beholden to any factory. We are only beholden to our client. So we've had to actually cease or halt orders, production as it started, or had somebody fix the mold or the tool before they begin producing, you know, widgets. So that's a huge advantage also to having allies in China.
Certainly, having a trustworthy third party that you can depend on to represent you and your interests and to provide fair reporting in the situation, I mean, it saves time. It saves you from financial risk. I mean, no one, not many people at least, want to fly from wherever they are. Let's say from where I'm from, like around Chicago, they don't really want to have to fly out for every order to make sure things match spec. They'd rather have an ally just checking things and doing it quickly and doing it professionally as well. There's a lot to be said for just the speed at which you should have a team on the ground in China responding to your needs. We talked about a cheap and cheerful product just now, butter trays. But, you know, there's certainly a lot of other great products that China is making now that maybe they weren't making so much of about 10 to 15 years ago. I think China has really advanced from making those cheap, you know, promotional items, simple items, to things like air purifiers. They're trying to make computer chips now, semiconductors, all those sorts of things. I think really, actually, they're very competitive now in the global manufacturing arena, and they have been for many years. But over time, with your perspective of seeing China as it's developed, where do you think China stands now in the global manufacturing arena?
Well, in many ways, at the very top, and using your example of butter trays versus more sophisticated products, let's think about that for a moment. You know, the Chinese, the vast majority of the Chinese population never owned a landline telephone. China went directly to cell or mobile phones and LED lighting. We don't have factories in the United States producing, you know, light-emitting diodes and vertically producing products that contain LEDs in them. China went directly to LED. China owns LED manufacturing. And as you said, you know, China's getting ahead of the innovation curve with a lot of direct sponsorships from the Chinese government. They want to be less of a smokestack destination, meaning producing less polluting products and going right to clean tech and making advances in green initiatives, solar, all kinds of sophisticated industries where we don't even have some of those factories set up in the United States right now. Basically, China owns the world's LED manufacturing, which isn't to say in, you know, Amsterdam or in Europe somewhere they can't set up LED factories. Of course they can, but China's innovation is unmatched right now. I think, you know, China sits right at the top of the spectrum when it comes to worldwide manufacturing. In many ways, they may not be the best source for low-cost manufacturing here in the next 3 to 5 years. You might want to continue having products made in Mexico, maybe tires or cast metal parts. But certainly for many, you know, sophisticated technologies, China's going to be the go-to.
Certainly, and I think that will really make the global manufacturing arena even more competitive. And hopefully, as well, consumers everywhere can benefit from that. I think at the end of the day, China is very much able to take an expensive product and make it cheaper. Now, the ways they go about doing that, those are debatable because there's some questions about IP and maybe corporate espionage. I'm not entirely familiar with all that, so I can't speak on it, but one example that I can speak of that I think is pretty reflective of this ability is GoPro-esque kind of technology. So the GoPro is pretty expensive, or it has been over the past few years. It was kind of one of those really cool, almost luxury items that you would want to buy if you're going snowboarding or surfing, if you're doing something awesome outdoors. I can't give the listeners out there an exact price point, but it was in the hundreds of dollars. I think it was like $200 or $300 for a nice GoPro. And then Chinese manufacturers, they're like, oh wait, yeah, we can do this. People want this? Oh, no problem. We'll sell it for $70. I think there is actually out there a $70 to $100 4K resolution GoPro style camera, and that's just because China decided to bring this into its manufacturing portfolio and bring the cost down. I think as well, when looking at a company like Xiaomi, Xiaomi is a very big company. They started out making phones, to all the listeners out there, started out making phones, and then they expanded their portfolio to make all these smart home appliances. They absorbed this company and they gave them access to their manufacturing supply chain, and they brought the cost of an air purifier down radically. They brought it down significantly. And so in the case of that GoPro camera, in the case of that air purifier, China just, they cheapened it and they kept the quality there. Those are two examples, and there's maybe many more out there, but I'm hoping that sort of ability will extend to some other products that are also very important.
Yeah, so that's a great point. You're talking about now, and we've hit on a couple product categories. LEDs is one, and you just referred to cameras. Well, at one point in time, certainly we made cameras and lenses and optics in the United States, but the camera technology that exists today in phones, and how about on the Ring doorbell, or how about on the wireless motion detection security cameras I have all over my house that feed into Wi-Fi and then you can see on your phone. Those, started in China. That technology started and now is basically owned by China on US branded products that are out there, such as the Ring doorbell and the cameras we see in all our phones. I've even seen cameras that connect to lapels, like you said, GoPro. But that comes back to another one of your first questions is advantages of working with China, and that is time. So GoPro was first to brand. Oh, there were already cameras out there. You could take your cell phone and go skiing with your cell phone and capture some of that video. But GoPro was the first to create a brand around the active lifestyle and incorporate, camera and capturing video. But now there are so many other US brands that are taking advantage of the existing assets and technology from China and repackaging that under another brand. So here's a case in point when China, not only have they innovated, but they own entire segments of some of our most sophisticated consumer products.
Absolutely. And I think that it's important to recognize that and to give props, because it's not necessarily an easy feat to make all these products and to keep them competitive, but they've been able to do it. And I think that kind of reflects on the future of sourcing in China, is they're going to keep up with this innovation and they're going to keep up with this competitiveness. It's not going to get less competitive. But just in general, I mean, that's kind of what I think. Things are going to stay innovative in China and it's going to be competitive. But what about you? What do you see as the future of sourcing from China?
The days of cheap China, per se, have sort of come to an end. That doesn't mean China is not the lowest cost alternative. That just means that the Chinese aren't going to give up 70 points of margin anymore because they know, like using LEDs and cameras, they own that technology. And so why give it away? Yet there's still a lot that is done through labor. Every product has a cost of goods, and a cost of goods is labor and materials and overhead. We always say if a product composition of the product cost contains 25% or more of labor in the total cost of goods, that's when you can begin looking at China. If you're just injection molding something, spitting out parts, putting them in a box and sending them somewhere, that really isn't China anymore. However, if the startup tooling is more expensive somewhere else, and which it is, and you then have to assemble something or clip that plastic part to something else or embed something, any secondary processes, China is going to remain, you know, the top destination for those kind of products. We do see a lot of factory closures right now. The Chinese government is cracking down on environmental regulators down to the provincial, even the city level. And so that means there are actually fewer factories than there were 10 years ago, which also contributes to the, you know, simple economics 101 supply and demand scenario. The bad news is products aren't getting cheaper. The good news is that only the best are in place, the companies and the factories that are complying to regulatory requirements. So we are seeing regulatory crackdowns. There are fewer factories. And, you know, the days of cheap China are over, but there's not a better place for startup, I think, than China.
I think, for example, like in a place like Shenzhen, where I'm based, you go to a place called Huachengbei, and you can find any type of electronic item you can imagine. Motors, circuit boards, PCBs, you know, all of it. It's just all in one place, and the lead times are so low, the labor is so abundant, all the intellectual capital that you need, you know, the product designers, industrial designers, it's all there. And despite, you know, some of the issues that you mentioned, like a regulatory crackdown on factories that don't comply with environmental laws, you know, there's still all these other factors that make China so competitive. And thank you so much so far for commenting on this. It's been a pleasure to hear about what you think are the ups and downs of sourcing from China. Just for our listeners out there, though, what are the best ways to work with BaySource or to contact you in case they have any questions?
Our website is www.baysourceglobal.com. Certainly that's got all the contact information. We even have a form that somebody can fill out to describe their project. Of course, we all always have a free one-on-one, no obligation consultation available. You know, I want to just say, we're not pro-China or pro-US or pro-Mexico or pro-anything, but what we are is pro-smart. So we're not pro-China manufacturing, we're pro-smart manufacturing. In many cases, we've turned customers away and said there's no reason, where we could have taken the product to China, no problem. But we want people to be successful, and so we advise them that China is not the best destination for their product startup. So if you want an unbiased sort of professional opinion on where your product stands in terms of its, you know, readiness for manufacturing or whether it's a candidate for China, we're always glad to offer that advice.
I don't think you can beat an honest opinion like that. Thanks again for your insights into this topic, David. I've learned certainly a lot, and I hope all of you, the listeners, have as well.
Well, it's been a pleasure having this discussion, and congratulations on all your success, too. People need your quality control, your services more than ever before. So it's great that you guys exist and have become so successful by helping clients as well.
Thank you so much, David.
I want to thank today's listeners for tuning into this podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast by searching for Voices of Importing on iTunes, CastBox, Podbean, or Stitcher. Please be sure to leave a review and rating for the podcast on whichever platform you listen to it on. Check out InTouch on its social media channels like LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter for manufacturing and importing advice and news. You can also check out InTouch Manufacturing Services on our SlideShare for industry-related PowerPoints. Finally, if you'd like to get in touch with InTouch directly, you can visit InTouch's website at www.intouchquality.com. Thank you, and take care.